magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to Touch Arcade Show, episode number 420.9. First episode of the new year. Happy New Year, happy 2020, happy new decade if you celebrate that sort of thing.
Happy new war, Jared. That's the new way.
Happy new impending war.
Yeah, that's
what a fun couple of days this new year has been so far. But
someone said that to me, and I was like, at first I was like, what? And then I was like, clever, very clever.
Yeah. So there's all that going on, but there's also, I don't know, what else is going on? And you got any off-topic stuff you want to get off your chest before we dive into mobile game stuff?
There was, but I've since forgotten it.
Yeah. Of course, if you're just tuning in, you're just listening to the audio version of this podcast, then you missed out on our extensive talk about dentistry whether or not this is a new decade or not. And how calendars are keeping time imperfectly.
I'm drinking a beer called Full Mallow Jacket. Get it?
I get it.
Bourbon barrel aged American double stout.
You'll appreciate this. So on New Year's Day, I don't really care about doing anything on New Year's Eve.
Oh yeah, what'd you do for New Year's anyway? Well, I guess you had a kid, so.
I do have a kid. That is a problem, but. New Year's Eve is kind of booty because it's like a bad night to go out unless you're into that sort of thing, right? Because it's just like the most obnoxious drunk people everywhere. And I don't know. It just hasn't been fun for me the last few times I've gone out on actual New Year's Eve.
You know what you need is what I found, and I'm the same way. Like, I hate being around like super drunk people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Unless you're like, the thing is, you have to be like riding that wave, right? Like, if you're getting drunk with like everyone else and you're drunk while other people are drunk, then that's super fun. But
great, yeah.
Very, at least for me, like, very rarely does that ever seem to kind of happen. Cause I'm not like, I'm not the dude that like, when someone's like, let's do shots, and I'm like, yeah let's do it. I'm usually the guy like, no, I'm going to stick with beer. Like, cool. So everyone like out races me, and then I'm just super annoyed. What you should do for New Year's Eve, we got into this a few years ago, is like, there's a bunch of like restaurants and other places that do like kind of like structured New Year's Eve things that are kind of like cool, but you kind of avoid like the bar atmosphere sort of thing. Like friends of ours go to the Melting Pot, which is a fondue chain in the Chicago area. I don't know if it's
nationwide. Yeah, we have those. Yeah.
But they do like a fancy New Year's Eve like dinner thing that starts at like 10 and is like a structured kind of like fixed menu that goes through New Year's, where they do like a champagne toast with everyone and all that fun stuff.
That's pretty cool. The Melting Pot is like a 4-hour experience anyway. So
so it's a good place to be like, yeah, let's chill out and do kind of like New Year's kind of stuff here. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm into now that I'm old and boring.
Yeah.
We went to Medieval Times for
New Year's. Probably fun.
It is, but like, so the problem is, like, we live maybe, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes maximum away from the Chicago Medieval Times. So we go there quite a bit because they do coupons that are just like ridiculous, you know, like like they'll send emails out that are like, hey, today only, buy one at half price, get one free kind of thing. Yeah. So you can like seriously go, like, sometimes it's like almost as cheap as just going out to like get dinner, you know?
Yeah.
So we go to Medieval Times quite a bit, and the thing is, the New Year's Eve one is no coupon, so it's full price, which is like the only time I've ever played full price for Medieval Times, and it was like $200-some for the two of us to go.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool. I don't know. Like, we went a couple years ago, and it was a lot of fun, so I was like, oh, let's check this out again, see if anything changed. It was largely the same, because Medieval Times doesn't change. But it was interesting how our seating situation was interesting this time around. So to my left was a woman who was with her kids and was like 10,000% checked out on the show. like on her phone the entire time. But like, what was she doing on her phone? I don't. Yeah. I'm a bad shoulder surfer when I'm like sitting next to people that are like doing shit on their phone. Because it's always interesting to me. If it's like, oh, is this person gonna play Candy Crush? Like, you know, they're just gonna like look at memes on Facebook. Like, what is this person gonna do? Because you can tell so much about someone by like what they do when they're like bored on their phone, right? So I was like shoulder surfing, and she like loaded this app like immediately after sitting down. I was like, oh, this is interesting. What's this person doing? And it was this weird fucking Android app that was nothing but surveys. It was like,
oh god,
surveys that you did for like some kind of like currency in the app. Like she was earning like gold coins doing these surveys.
Yeah.
And it was nuts because I was like, oh, this is interesting. She's gonna bust out like one or two before the show starts, and it like powered through the entire time. And it was interesting because I was like, man, she's racking up a lot of coins. Like, I'm really curious to see like what she gets on this. And like, just as they were like as the show was wrapping up, she like cashed out her coins and got a $5 Amazon gift card for like 2+ hours.
But if that's all you do, I mean, maybe it adds up. If you just do not care about you know, the show.
But I mean, seriously, like 2+ hours, like paying attention and being like, oh, how do you like Campbell's tomato soup? Like, do you think it's creamy? Do you what do you eat it with? Do you eat it with a grilled cheese sandwich? All this stuff, like, very dumb, not interesting things that she was getting paid like approximately like $2.25 an hour to do.
I guess is that any worse than doing that same thing for like in-game coins for like free play games?
Valid question, I guess, but I don't know. It was just so bizarre because I know that I knew that those survey style apps existed because like remember back in the day on the Touch, like very early days of the App Store, you had kids that would like do all sorts of random shit like that to get iTunes gift cards.
Yeah, right.
And I always was like, well, you know, whatever. If you're like 10 years old and you know, getting a $10 iTunes gift card is pretty huge. So you buy
right.
9 or 10 games, right?
Yeah.
So doing the surveys or whatever random crap you had to do to get that, like that didn't seem too bad, but like $5 Amazon gift card, man, that's bonkers. Like
you just worked for like $2 an hour.
Yeah, it's insane. And then to our right, There was a couple that sat down, and this woman like sits down and like introduces herself to us and is like, oh, this is the first night that we've been out without our kid. And I was like, oh, cool, man. Well, you know what? Well, yeah, they warned us. They were like, sorry, like we've been drinking since we got here. Like, you know, it's our first night out without the kid. You know, so sorry if we're rowdy or whatever. And I was like, oh, dude, no, totally fine. Like, because most people when they say that, it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna cheer for our night or you know whatever we're gonna.
Yeah, they're not actually obnoxious.
They're just being polite. Yeah. This woman was unfucking believable. I mean, it was like, you know when
table
you go
dancing
to
dancing and stuff.
Well, no. Like, you know when you go to a concert and there's like that. I can't even do the noise. It's like, ow, ow, kind of thing. Yeah. Like, you know that, like, and you're always like, who's doing that? Like, there's always one person.
One
that,
very distinctive. It's like,
the
yell.
Same. Can you do? You can do the finger whistle, right? Or I like. Can't. Yeah, so like, and there's always a person that's doing the extremely loud whistle anywhere you go. So we were next to the ow ow woman.
Wow.
And she did that the entire show. I mean, the entire show. It was unbelievable.
That sounds like the good kind of obnoxious that you'd actually laugh at.
It was just so funny because like Lindsay and I were like dying because like on our left we had someone that like could not be more checked out. Of this entire thing, unless they were just asleep. And then this person on our right who is like,
she was like into it.
20 out of 10 into it. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, unfortunately, I've never been to Medieval Times, and the closest one to me is in LA.
Oh, man. I feel like
so I have to drive for 6 hours to
at
go.
At E3, we talked about going to Medieval Times.
Yeah, we should have done it.
Oh, fucked up.
Should have done it back in our E3 days.
It's pretty good. The show's gotten a little lame over the years, I would say. Oh. But, you know.
Maybe when the kiddo is old enough to appreciate it, he'd get a kick out of it.
You guys don't have anything like that? Like any like dinner and show things?
I mean, probably if I looked into it, we might. But like the closest that I know of off the top of my head is like dinner theater, which I've done a few times. It's actually very fun. But the one that we used to go to is no longer there, so I don't know where else there is.
Oh, the other funny part about a Medieval Times experience was God, I wish you'd been so you'd know like what I'm talking about. But like, so you have a server like most restaurants, you know, but like they also play a part in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, so they like bring them out to like carry the flag around and stuff like that. Yeah. Cause they're like, I don't know. They keep everyone very busy there. And our server, it was like equally funny and depressing because like she could not be more miserable and checked out. Because she was like, I got here at open today. Like
I am over it.
she's like, this is my third show of the day. So sorry, my voice is kind of dead. And I was like, oh, dude, like, don't worry about it. Like, we're just, you don't even have to talk to us. Like,
yeah.
You know, all this stuff. Yeah. And it was just funny how completely checked out she was during the show, like leaning her head up against the flagpole, all the stuff that she's holding.
Over it. That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, times. So I, New Year's Eve, I did not do anything. Pam had to work anyway, so it was whatever. She got home.
It's probably a really good night for her to work, though.
Typically, yeah. I think this year was as well. And then we don't have to worry about babysitting or anything like that. But we did drive the kid up to the parents' house on New Year's Day morning and drop him off. And he had his first spend the night elsewhere night without us. Which is, we've both been away from him before, but usually it's just somebody's at our house keeping an eye on the monitor while he's sleeping or something like that.
Yeah.
So this is the first night that he's been gone. It was like about 24 full hours. He was at our parents' house, not at our own house. And it went fine. He did good. But yeah, it was an experience, but it was nice to get away. And then New Year's Day, we went and got brunch and then kind of bar hopped around town a little bit. Which I'm not as good at as I used to be, but we did hang. I mean, we did put in a good 7 or 8 hours until we finally had to go home and let the dog out to go pee. Otherwise, we probably would have kept going.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we tried to go out to get breakfast on New Year's Day, but it was only like two breakfast places in town that were open, and they were both like slammed to the max.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say it's probably 50-50 in terms of places that were open versus not open on actual New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And one place that was open that we stopped at was Yard House.
Oh, cool.
And Pam got a flight, and because it was cold out, she was feeling getting like stouts and, you know, heavy, yeah, thick sure. beers. And she got your favorite beer.
Oh, the peanut butter nitro?
That's it.
Oh, I love that one.
I tasted it, and it is delicious. It's I know amazing. What you're talking about now. It I'm is usually so, not into those dark
so
beers.
After we were at PAX or whatever, I got that last. I like looked it up online and just like typed it in and like, I wasn't trying to look for the calories in that beer, but like it showed up in like the little like, you know, info panel, like the ABV and stuff like that. You might as well just like drink straight maple syrup.
Yeah,
it's so sure. fucking dense.
That's why it's so good, though. But yeah, that was the Yard House. Poor Yard House was our server. We sat at the bar and one of the servers back there was probably, she was like in her 50s and it was her first day. On New Year's Day.
Oh, my God.
With the both...
Yeah.
On both of sides of us was the most obnoxious people on Earth. And I kept being like, I'll switch places with you if you want to sit next to me. She's like, no, you do not want to switch places with me because these people are awful. And so we were just the quiet couple in the middle talking shit about everyone around us. But yeah, the poor server was just getting railroaded by not only the super drunk customers, but by the other girls that worked behind the bar that were like obviously giving her a really shitty time about not knowing what she's doing because it's her first day.
Oh my God.
And so we like felt super bad for her and we were like super nice to her and left her a nice tip. And even though they probably all share tips anyway or whatever, but we told her too, when one of the shitty couples next to us left, we were like, those people were garbage. They were mad because they like ordered some wine special and got, she ordered specifically a certain size pour, but that pour doesn't come with the special. Hmm. And so like the customer probably should have known that before she ordered, but I guess maybe if the chick wasn't new, she would have at least warned them about it. I don't know. Whatever the case, it was like $2 extra and they would not let it go. And it was like, the dude was the type of guy that was like, well, that $2.75 is going to come out of her tip. I don't know. Like loudly saying stuff like that. So she would hear.
I hate people like that.
Dude, who fucking cares? It's New Year's Day. You're out drinking in the middle of the day on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's $2 extra because you got a nicer, a bigger pour of wine or whatever it was. So can't stand people like that. And then to my left was like three super drunk bros that were there for the college football games that were obnoxiously and loudly telling everyone how they don't like going out in public and drinking. They usually just stay at home. And I'm like,
okay.
Nobody cool. that likes to stay at home is that loud and obnoxious in public.
Yeah.
Maybe you are. I don't know. Maybe that's why you stay home. But... So essentially, it ended up being a fun day.
Yeah, I always feel bad for people that treat servers shitty.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, what's the rest of your life like? That, like, you're treating someone that, like... Everyone knows that servers don't get paid very much. And
not everyone knows
it's a hard job and everything else. So, like, why... Yeah. Why be anything other than, like, super appreciative?
I think the difference comes down to people that have worked in food service before and people that have not. Because all you even need to do is, even just like your first job at McDonald's or whatever, teaches you all you need to know about serving other people and how shitty people can be to you when you're earning, like, $4.25 an hour or whatever. Whatever the minimum wage was when I was 15, which I think that's what it was. And, it's once you've done it, then you have a new appreciation. And it's not like I haven't had crappy servers before. And usually the crappy servers know they're doing a crappy job and they just don't care. And at that point, it's like, well, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
I don't know. I mean, like, I always feel like, you know, how do you know that someone's really a crappy server versus I'm just having, like, a really shitty day that they've been there since, like, 6 a.m.
Yeah. Well, there's so many factors, too, where it's like, oh, the kitchen staff is just goofing everything up tonight and it's backing everything up. But I'm the person that has to go to the table and tell people that food's not ready and get yelled at or whatever. There's very little. There's a lot of things that are out of the server's control, too, that they have to kind of take a rap for, which that's always difficult. So,
yeah, in situations like that, I've been like, I've asked the server, like, when we're leaving, like, hey, you guys do tip split with the kitchen? And if they're like, yeah, or whatever, I'm like, here, just take cash. Like, don't, like, just pretend
this
you found this on
you
the floor.
And not that guy back there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, that was my New Year's. Cool. And it was pretty fun. I guess we could talk about mobile games, too.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Is what this podcast is about.
Let's do it. You don't want to talk about the impending World War III more?
I don't. I just want to wake up one day and we blew up or something. I don't know what's
going to happen. Wake up one day to find out that you're just awakened into the Matrix and none of this
Maybe.
Is real.
That would actually be more of a comforting thought than some of the alternatives. But anyway, so there was really no news this past week because App Store was shut down over Christmas week and just not a whole lot going on with all the holidays and the New Year and all that junk. So I thought we'd talk about the best mobile games things that we posted and the game of the year and all that good stuff. I think we talked about this before I had posted it last week. But yeah, I ended up doing, you know what it's like when we do these year end things and it's like, here's a list of 300 really good games that easily could be part of a best of list, but you can't have 300. So we'd usually try to pare it down to 100. And, even this year, I was like, I don't want to even try and do that because I just know it's going to be way more work than I have the resources to do.
What, the pare down? Or
yeah. No, doing 100.
Oh.
So I actually was just like, you know what? I'm going to go through this list and really be strong with my recommendations. And even though there will be some good games that get left off the list, I'm going to try and keep it to just what I think is kind of the best of the best. And turned out to be about 30-something games, like 33, I think. And so that was kind of the best games list. Shorter than 100, and there easily could have been two or three times as many games on there that you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense that it's on there. It deserves it, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could have managed it. And I also think it's nicer sometimes to have a smaller cross-section, because when everything's special, then nothing's special. So... I feel like the best games list does a nice job of kind of like hitting most every genre and most every type of game and kind of big noteworthy thing that came out
this
year.
Well, actually, Jared, that's where you're wrong, because I'm extremely mad that a game I like is not on this list.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I don't know. I guess the only thing you can do about it is comment below.
Well, I mean, what I was actually thinking is it's lucky that you live so far away from me.
Yeah, otherwise there'd be trouble knocking at my door.
Big trouble. There'd be a turd floating in your pool right now.
The Sue says there's not already.
Well, then my task rabbit did his job.
yeah, that's, oh man. I kind of want you to try and task rabbit up somebody to poop in my pool and see if you can actually complete that task or not. So anyway, so we have best games, new games of the year, and it includes mobile original stuff and ports, because there's just so many good ports this year. Like an absurd amount of really good ports. Like you can play Rogue Legacy, you can play Grease, Hyper Light Drifter, Dead Cells.
I would say this would be Journey. This is the year of the port.
Kind of. Every year feels that way to a certain extent, but this year just felt like extra, wow, like people are really bringing some high-profile, you know, popular indie games to mobile now. Whereas before, it always seemed like people wanted these popular games to come, and everyone was like, nah, nah, mobile. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, this year, they were like, screw it, let's do it. And then a lot of really good original stuff, too. So poke through the list if you haven't already. And then kind of, I don't remember us doing this much in previous years, but I thought there was enough good updates that we could do like a list of the best updates. And that sort of included a mix of games that were
episodic.
Well,
that was always the awkward part, though. Remember where it was like a game like Hearthstone or whatever would get like a massive, massive like new expansion, add a ton of shit. And it was like, it seems weird not to include it in the best games.
Came out in 2011, so it doesn't count or whatever. Yeah. So this is kind of a way to pay some homage to these also good games that maybe didn't come out this year, but kind of maybe came into their own got really significant.
Grand Theft Auto Vice City, that's a big one. KOTOR, yep, I'm on board with all these.
Yeah, and actually all the Rockstar games, a couple of them were last year, but almost all the rest were this year that they got like full screen updates and iOS support and stuff like that. So it's nice that Rockstar keeps their library going like that. And yeah, the Rome games, they all got the updates this year too. Skullgirls got online multiplayer, which is a big deal. Lots of old games that you thought were just dead and gone got updated to be brought back to life, which I thought was cool. And then games like Ticket to Earth or Agent A got their final episodes, which I think is a big deal when a game that's episodic gets completed. That almost feels like the time to include it in a best games list or whatever, even though I think both those were included in previous years' lists. So
it's been kind of whatever. Honestly, like I didn't expect this year to have so many of these like just completely out of the blue updates. Like when we started doing Game Club stuff, like I was like, oh man, we're gonna like monopolize the update news. Yeah. And then it would be like Knights of the Old Republic is back and all this stuff. Yeah. It's like, what? Never in a million years would I put money on like anyone updating Knights of the Old Republic. Particularly with how that game is effectively like not canon anymore, and with what weird stuff Disney's doing with their games and Star Wars stuff.
Fun still.
It's really good. Have you ever played through it?
Yeah. It's still like the best Star Wars game, I think. So.
Oh yeah, easily, and the sequel's really good too, and everything else. So nothing but good.
But yeah, it's like I don't think they're eating into your market though, because there's so many old games that still need updates.
It's just been surprising like how many of these like true blast from the past. Like whoa,
like Lost Echo is one of those games where you're like, oh, I remember when that came out and it was cool, and then it didn't do well, and then the company went under, and so you just write that one off as like it's gone forever, right? And then randomly one of their engineers just decided to work on an update in his spare time because he just likes the game and wanted it to keep living. And so they updated it, and it's like, and now it's just totally free too. There's no like, you know, ads or anything. I think it's totally free. It says it's a price on here, but either way, it's like one of those things you would never expect to happen.
Oh, and like Spiral Episode 1, like what the fuck?
Spiral, same thing. Yeah. So yeah, good updates, good list to check out some stuff. And then, Apple Arcade was kind of a weird thing this year. Cause, I don't know. I didn't think it felt right to, and I feel this way about just posting reviews about Apple Arcade games too, but it doesn't feel right to intermingle them with the regular list. Mm-hmm. Because I'd hate someone to be looking through the list of the best games and be like, oh yeah, this does look awesome, and click on it and be like, oh, I have to subscribe to something to play this one.
Yeah, for sure.
So I feel like it's a separate thing, so I gave it its own separate section and kind of picked out my, I think it's like 12 or 13 favorite Apple Arcade games from the year, which is kind of the same deal where there could have been more on this list easily. There's a lot of really good stuff on Apple Arcade. But these are just kind of the ones that I thought were the biggest and kind of the best. And there's some good stuff here. So maybe you haven't played through all the Apple Arcade games yet. If you have, let me know. That would be impressive. But Yeah, you should definitely have made sure you've played through at least these games, because I think it's the best Apple Arcade.
I still think Grindstone is my favorite Apple Arcade game, but
yeah,
Grindstone. I think what bugs me about it is it's like so transparently built to be a free to play game that they just removed all that free to play shit. That is like
yeah.
All right, yeah, whatever.
It's tricky. It's not a light switch. You flip it from paid to free or free to pay.
But still, like, the core mechanic is really good, so I guess that's all that really matters.
I think one of the cool things about Apple Arcade, so, like, looking at Assemble with Care, which is the S2's game this year, which is awesome, but it's, like, an hour or whatever. It's kind of like Monument Valley. Like, it's a really short experience, and you might play through it again or whatever, but it's not, like, many hours worth of content, right? But what's there is, like, super entertaining and good and memorable or whatever. And I think Apple Arcade is cool for stuff like that, because it seems to be a lot of these games, and especially the best ones, are ones that are pretty brief experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably couldn't release it for $5 and not have people be mad that it was only an hour or something like that. I mean, especially looking at Monument Valley, they were $5 and you can beat that game in like 30 minutes. So you had people like mad about that. Probably less people mad than more people that were like loved it, but you know what I mean? So you worry about stuff like that when a game is a little too short, but when it's part of this, it almost makes more sense, because it's like, cool, yeah, I played through it and enjoyed it and beat it and whatever, and it's part of the service you're already paying for.
Honestly, dude, like,
multi-hour games.
So. I don't mind that stuff at all. Like, I feel like the games that I like really enjoy these days are the like really tight like games that don't overstay their welcome and everything else. Like, that's why I've been like such a huge fan of the. Like, even if I don't get into, like, Call of Duty multiplayer, like, Call of Duty single player is always really good. Because, like, an 8-hour long amusement park ride, you know, like, and that's always really fun. And I don't care that it's over in a few hours. Yeah. Like, it's fine.
I am also totally on board with that. But how awesome would it be, though, too, if, like, Call of Duty was on Game Pass or something that you already subscribed to?
Mm-hmm.
And then you extra wouldn't care. You'd be like, play through the single player and never think about it again or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I feel about some of these shorter Apple Arcade games, which is totally fine. Because there is also stuff that's like meant to be played forever.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But anyway, so yeah, good Apple Arcade games. And then I did a list of your Game Club games that I thought were kind of the top of the year in terms of what got brought back, which includes 3 Touch Arcade games of the year.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Space Miner, Spider, and Waking Mars.
Yeah.
So obviously, I don't think Mage Gauntlet. I think Mage Gauntlet was like a runner-up or something. But
something like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know. Our little info-grabbing software stuff doesn't like to update the icons to your cool Game Club-looking icons. Mm-hmm. I looked into it a little bit, but it's just funny seeing like, hi, how are you with the Open Faint logo on it still? It's a throwback logo. But anyway, yeah, these are like, I mean, this could be my top 10 games of the year from like the last decade too. Like, all these games on here are like,
yeah, I mean, like, what we're trying to do is like create like the, like, effectively like the classic rock hits radio station of games.
That's what it is. Yeah.
You know,
that's totally what it is. So yeah, pretty exciting to be able to include games like this nowadays, and talk about them again, even though they came out so long ago. So yeah, Game Club games of the year, Apple Arcade games of the year, updates of the year, and then regular games of the year, plus links to all of Sean's Switch best of the year stuff, and then all the previous best of the year coverages by year, which is a fun thing to look back on.
Yeah, it's always crazy to go back. Hey, so here's actually something to think about. So Touch Arcade has spanned, I mean, this is a bit of a bullshitty puff figure, but Touch Arcade has spanned 3 decades.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean,
started 2008.
Been around the entire 2010s,
and now in the 2020s.
Now we embark into the 2020s. That's true. We are multi-decade spanning.
3 decades. Trace,
which is wild. It is funny though. Like, looking at this 2008 list, it's like Aurora Faint, Poppy Jump, Dropship. Dropship's a game you should track down and bring back, which I'm sure you probably already looked in it. Wordle, Turism, Toybot Diaries, the original Field Runners. This is 2008 was, I mean, and these are all really good games too.
Well, Rolando has been brought back.
Rolando, yeah. And Snail Mail was the reader's choice pick, which Snail Mail, God, I remember being heavy into that game when it first came out. Hero of Sparta, the original, like, just crazy to go back and think about all these games from 2008.
I like reading like super old Touch Arcade stories because like the Arne and Blake kept using like the same exact words to describe everything.
Yeah.
It's like game name, a true gem.
Yeah, I know. Totally. Yeah, but we didn't do, I'll get to this in a minute, but Rolando, I think, probably would have been a game of the year in 2008 had we done games of the year in 2008.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, for sure.
I don't think there's anything that really outshined it, but it also was in a tough spot because it came out on like December 18th or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it came out super late in the year. And I feel like got most of its buzz in the following year in 2009. So,
yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, the 2009 list, same thing. So much crazy stuff on here. Rolando 2, already a sequel came out, and they actually had that third one planned for later in the year too, which is kind of a crazy thing.
Sauce Lifter.
The champs. Sauce Lifter, bring it back. Do your magic. So yeah. Definitely click through those links to the old coverage stuff, too. I'm sure there's plenty of great comment reading going on in those, too.
Yeah, if you're into that.
If you're into how much people used to argue about that stuff back in the day.
Yeah.
And then so...
So here's where I have a bone to pick, Jared.
Yeah, please be mad about this.
2019 Game of the Year is a port?
Yeah.
How dare you touch
I did struggle game. With this a lot because we've run into this problem in previous years talking about Game of the Year, and a really good port will be up there, and it's like, I don't want to say it affects it negatively, but it is a factor. And if there's something that's like a mobile original, something that feels like it wouldn't be the same on another platform, like it really utilizes the touchscreen well, or just feels really made for mobile or whatever, I feel like that carries a little more weight over just a really good port that also works fine on touchscreen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of an already good game or whatever.
I feel like we ran into this with the big one that I remember is Death Road to Canada, if I recall correctly. Because didn't that come out on Steam first?
Yeah.
And we were like, God, this game is so good. But it's like weird that the mobile one is like a port, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas like if it would have been mobile first. Yeah.
And then I think it was Space Miner's year where people were mad that we didn't pick The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And that had been out on every other platform before mobile, too, or something like that. I don't know. It's hard, too, when it's a game that's won Game of the Year awards on other platforms already, mm-hmm. which Dead Cells has. But whatever. Like, my justification for all this stuff was like, yes, I took all these things into consideration. And at the end of the day, I don't care because this is the game I liked most this year. This is what I thought was the best game.
Yeah.
It's the one I played the most. And it's just like so good that I don't, all that other stuff doesn't matter to me. It's kind of how I look at it. So,
yeah.
But,
Dead Cells is really fucking good. Like, it's dumb how good the mobile port is, too.
It's really stupid how good this game is. Like, every facet of it, really. And it's kind of one of those games that just keeps on giving where, you're constantly the closest thing I can compare it to is like Wayward Souls, and how you start playing it and you're like, this game is like balls hard. Like I can't get anywhere in it. I don't really know what's going on. It seems too complicated. It's too hard. I'm mad. I died already. Blah blah blah. And then like it's like a slowly peeling the layers off an onion where the more you play, your skill, you can see it improve. And then as your skill improves, you get further. And then you do better, and you unlock more things. And there's so many things to unlock and upgrade and tailor your gameplay to how you like, or tailor your character to how you like, or whatever. And there's also like a good amount of like so much of it's randomized that you got to make some tough decisions along the line too about like what kind of strategy you want to utilize based on what items you come across and blah blah blah. Just everything that's like. You know, all the buzzwords of all the popular indie games of like roguelikes, dungeon crawlers, platformers, blah, 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 loot, all that sort of stuff. It's like, I think Dead Cells does it the best out of all of them, puts it all together into like an almost perfect package. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of game that even when you kind of master it, it still throws like new, harder versions of itself at you and new challenges towards you.
Well,
it's kind of like one of those games that will never you'll never truly beat no matter how good you get.
I haven't really fiddled with the mobile version too much because I just play it on the Switch. Like, that's where all my progress is, you know? Does the mobile version have the daily dungeon mode thing?
Yeah, it has the daily dungeon, but it does not have almost all the additional content that's been released on other platforms, which that's probably the biggest downfall of it. Because there's a lot of cool items and extra stuff that's come by way of expansions that's not in the mobile version that should be coming to it, but I think it's just slower because, you know, a third party handles this port. So that's really it's the only...
Digis, right, that did this?
Digis, yeah. And so I think that's the only knock against this game is that content-wise, it's not up to par with, like, the other versions of it. But I did go back and forth over the past, like, week or two playing the mobile version and then playing my Switch version right after it and bouncing back and forth and really trying to be like, do I really like playing it on touchscreen better than playing it with buttons? And the answer is yeah. I don't know why. It just feels right. I feel like the controls work really well. You can use a controller with the iOS version if you wanted. So I feel like if you were going to buy one version, unless you just are dead set on playing on your Switch all the time or whatever, if you bought the mobile version, it works on your iPhone or your iPad, and it has controller support for when you need it. But then if you're out and about and not toting your controller around or whatever, it's perfectly fine playing with the virtual controls too. And I feel like this is more than anything a game that feels good to have on you at all times because you can easily pop into it for a few minutes, play through a part of the level, beat up some guys, and be done with it just as easily as you can sit down and play it all day straight. So it just feels like just by nature it works well as a mobile game for all those reasons that I don't think they designed thinking mobile in mind, but it ends up working in its favor. And so, yeah, this was just the game I played the most, far and away a game I played most this year, and will continue to play the most, I think, for a long time to come.
Well, so have you bought the Switch version yet?
Yeah, I own it on Switch. Yeah,
and but you still like the mobile version better, huh?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, that's really surprising. That makes me think I should give the mobile version a fair shake because I was like, my experience with the mobile version is basically like, oh yeah, this is a really good port. All right, back
to
the Switch.
It's hard to go between the two versions because I have different things unlocked and different levels of unlockedness on each one. And so that can be annoying too because you're like, well, I kind of really just want to make progress with one version, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to be playing it, you'd rather be unlocking and progressing in just one version. But kind of fun. I wasn't super far on the Switch version anyway, so I actually erased it and started fresh. Hmm. And so that's been kind of interesting too. But I think like control-wise and just playability-wise, it's got a better frame rate and it just kind of looks sharper, the iPhone version over the Switch version. I do think I prefer the iPhone version because I just like to be able to pull it out of my pocket and play it whenever I want
instead of
up the Switch or whatever. But I will say that I played this game. I actually bought it on Switch and never played it for a long time until after the iOS version came out. So I was playing the iOS version hardcore for like the first week after it came out before I even tried it on Switch. Hmm. And so part of it might have been like that's how I trained my brain to know how to play this game with the virtual buttons. And then it felt fumbly with physical buttons just because that's not what I was used to or something. And I would imagine you might feel the same way playing the Switch version all the time, trying out the iPhone version, being like, this doesn't feel quite the same. But I think you get used to either of them. I'm kind of content with just sort of maintaining a save file on both and just bouncing back and forth. I don't know.
Yeah, this kind of thing is like my number one irritation with like gaming in general right now. And like what's been a huge irritation for me is ever since watching the Netflix show The Witcher, like everyone's replaying The Witcher 3 again, right? And I'm one of those idiots too. And God, the problem is like it's good on like it's best on the PC, it's good on console, and it's okay on Switch.
Right.
The problem is, like, it's real easy to pick up and play on the Switch.
Right.
And the graphics look like fucking booty on the Switch. I mean, it's like, I would describe just, like, barely over the line of what I would describe as playable on the Switch. But it's, like, so nice. Yeah. Just, I mean, because, like, you know how it is. You push the power button, press the button three times, and you're back in game, right?
Right.
Versus, like
boot it up,
booting up your
down,
Xbox.
Take up an entire
else.
TV.
Or, like, going downstairs to my basement and be like, all right, let me, like, load up my Windows PC and start a game and stuff.
I get it. It's like the old adage that was like the best camera you have is the one you have on you or whatever.
But like,
and it's kind of true for video games too.
Oh yeah, for sure. But like, what's so annoying is that like I have three versions of Witcher 3 that I own that I've bought. I bought the game three fucking times, which like that's fine. Okay, sure, whatever. But each game is in like different stages of progress.
Yeah.
Which is so annoying to me. Like I would. I would like that's almost something I would even like subscribe to, like some kind of like, you know, a couple bucks a month, like Witcher cloud save thing to just be able to, you know, because there's definitely situations where you're like, all right, like I Saturday, I got nothing to do. I'm going to play Witcher for a few hours. Then I'd like load it up on my PC or you know.
I want to veg out with good graphics and good sound and big screen. But other than that, I'm just fine, making progress through on the couch on my Switch. Mm-hmm. When I'm doing something else or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I totally agree that that's something that going forward, I think is going to be more of a thing because there's a lot of games and a lot of services and that do stuff like that with cross saves, cross platform. But I think it'll become more of a necessity for people going forward, especially when there's games on like every platform, including mobile.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, something like Dead Cells, are you playing on PC? Are you playing on console? Are you playing on Switch? Are you playing on mobile? Wouldn't it be cool to have all your save files just synced across them and you wouldn't have to worry about it?
Yeah. No, I think that would be like, you know, consoles are always getting faster. Video cards are always getting better. Like mobile devices are always getting better. Like I don't care about that anymore. Like the prime innovation I want is all these games are on everything now. Like fucking cross-platform cloud save. Like someone do it. Someone needs to be like the open faint of cross-platform cloud save.
Yeah.
I would pay money for that.
Well, maybe we'll do it. If there's any investors out there that want to dump hundreds of millions of dollars into us, like, we're the idea guys. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure there's all sorts of reasons why they don't, like with regards to like, you know, Xbox isn't going to probably let you like import some foreign save file. And because like when you look at like the history of consoles, like that is always how consoles got hacked was like, oh, here's this jacked up save file that you can load into this game that was kind of buggy that like now allows you to jailbreak your PlayStation or whatever.
Yeah, no, they need to clamp down on that stuff. But at the same time, you need to figure out how to not have to clamp down on it, too, I think. But speaking of how you mentioned that it looks booty on the Switch or whatever, which is exactly the same as Mortal Kombat 11, which I probably would have bought it on a different platform if I knew it looked that bad.
Oh, yeah, shockingly bad on the Switch.
But, like, I watched videos of it. I even watched, like, the PS4 versus Switch comparison videos and stuff like that. And watching videos on YouTube, you're kind of like, that's not that bad. And when you're actually in-game and playing, it's not that bad. Like, you don't really notice the missing, like, lighting features and stuff like that as much as you think you might. But then it's like, cutscenes especially are, like, N64, jagged, terrible, just god-awful. Like, how is it even acceptable that it looks this bad, even though I know it's an underpowered system?
Yeah.
And so what I really, really hope is that a Switch Pro comes out.
I know.
That it's like, hey, we can at least run like current gen stuff, like a normal acceptable rate, and probably won't mess with next generation console stuff on the Switch or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like a Switch 2 or something. But I would at least like that basic, if you're going to port a game to it, have it look like basic good as like the console.
Oh, yeah. Dude, it is shocking how bad The Witcher 3 looks. I mean, like, the game itself is so good that it's really easy to be like, all right, well, this looks like shit, but like the game is so good that like I'm playing it at a bar. This is really cool.
You know,
while I wait for the Bears game to start or whatever. This is really neat that we're this a thing I can even do. But it looks bad.
So. And it's even worse when you compare it to Nintendo's first party stuff where you're like, this is the most amazing looking game
I've
seen. Why can't other people? It's possible to make really good, graphically impressive games on the system if you look at Nintendo's.
Oh yeah, dude! Like if you compare like the graphics of like Witcher 3 to, which admittedly I completely understand, Witcher 3 is a very, very big open world game that was made only a couple years ago. Like that's, I get it. I'm not saying that's not the case, but like if you compare how the game looks to like Luigi's Mansion 3, it's like the difference between like GameCube to like Wii U or Switch. Which is crazy to think. But
I also wonder too though, with the Switch being a success, like a lot of these ports were games that were never intended for the Switch in the first place. Mm-hmm. But now that people know it's a successful platform and probably will continue to be successful for a long time, I wonder if now when they're developing new games, they're like, let's take extra care to develop specifically for the Switch so that things look good on it or whatever. I bet that'll probably be more commonplace too, because a lot of the problems are with games. Like Mortal Kombat 11 launched on all the platforms at the same time, but you have to know it was in development for like a long ass time before the Switch came around.
Oh, for sure.
So it's likely that they did the best that they could, but also if they had known from the gate about the Switch and developing for it, then it might have had a better chance at having a better version, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just what's interesting too is that Sean mentioned that people that like do like the data mining stuff that dig through the code of these games, like someone found that like the Switch version of The Witcher is like made to run at higher resolutions.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, like, if that was that meant to be a Switch Pro game, and this like new version of the Switch that they just like stealth launched was supposed to be the Switch Pro?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I don't know. Like, and you've seen the same thing with like Grid Autosport on mobile. Was the same thing. People went in and were able to manipulate the files to get higher resolutions and different effects and stuff like that, which I think it's you know, the developer's decision to be like, do I want this to run on the most number of devices possible? And even the high-end devices, do I want to not make their battery burnout in an hour, or, you know what I mean, run super hot or something like that. So I think they purposely make these concessions, even though it's not it would be technically possible to run it and look much better and stuff like that. And that could be the same with the Witcher too. If you like went in and messed with the files and all of a sudden had it running at like a high resolution and your Switch died in an hour, you might be like, oh, I don't know if that's a good trade-off. But
I mean, who knows? Maybe. It'd
be
nice
if you had the choice, at least.
But if you had, like, an external battery pack, or we're just,
that's
like,
why you should be able to choose that stuff, I think, which is what I love about, like, PCs that have, like, every setting you could think of for all the graphics, and you can just run it how you like.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, Cloud Sync, cross-platform Cloud Sync needs to be a thing in 2020.
Somebody invent it.
If we're still alive at the end of the year. But 2019 Game of the Year runner-up, Rolando Royal Edition.
Yeah, so this was like kind of the game I had in mind if I was going to choose a very mobile-y game of the year.
I'm surprised that these weren't swapped. I'm not going to lie.
They could have been swapped. And I probably went back and forth more often than you would imagine on what to do with what. But I did think at least it was nice that Rolando got its due as a Game of the Year contender, at least, since we weren't doing Game of the Year when the first one came out in 2008. But this is like the benchmark of like what you would want from like a mobile specific game, because you control it with tilt, you make heavy use of the touchscreen in unique ways. And it was the first, to my recollection, one of the first like truly exclusive to mobile big
games. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like particularly like NG Moco was like, a lot of people, and it was, I thought, pretty warranted at the time. It was like, oh, NG Moco is like the Nintendo of mobile.
They were. Those early years, it was like, you saw that name and you knew it was going to be a good game.
What's interesting about NG Moco's kind of like, I don't know, like flag in the sand or whatever you want to say that they planted on mobile is that, like, I run into people a lot, like friends of mine that I do not consider to be like gamery types or mobile games or whatever. They kind of like catch wind of what I'm doing with Game Club. They're like, oh my God, you remember that game? What was it called? Eliminator or I don't know. It was like a first person shooter.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Eliminate. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, you got to bring that back. That was my favorite game.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. Like that's crazy. Like how many people knew about Eliminate?
That was one of my most, bonkers. My best mobile gaming memories was the Eliminate, like the peak of its hotness.
Oh yeah. Dude, that game was
so fun.
Really good. I mean, it was basically like Quake 2 on your phone.
Right. Yeah, it was awesome. But yeah, Rolando Royal Edition is a complete remake of the 2008 game with big, crazy, beautiful 3D graphics. And it's kind of it's one of those things where if you played Rolando to death, even back in the day, I still think this is fun to play through now because it is got a lot of differences. It looks a lot better. And it's been so damn long since Rolando came out, 10 years, over 10 years, that it's like a really refreshing, fun nostalgic sort of thing. But more than that, I think it's awesome that, like, people, there wasn't like a whole lot of iOS users in the end of 2008. You know what I mean? It was definitely like a niche product still. And so there's bound to be tons of people that didn't experience Rolando the first time around too. So now playing this new version, it's like, holy crap, this is like this really fun platformer, lots of puzzle elements, tons of cute characters and stuff like that. Just all around a really good mobile game. And so I thought it deserved a spot high up on this list. And like you said, could have been interchangeable with Game of the Year or not.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's Rolando. It's the man. So, yeah, I love this game. It's only $3. I think you should buy it if you have not bought it.
How do you not buy this at $3? I mean, like Rolando, it's like, it would have been the Mario mobile if NG Mocha hadn't pivoted to free play and then got sold and disappeared. And then,
right. It's also kind of crazy to think 2008 that, like, okay, that was 11 years ago, 12 years ago this game came out. And in that span of time, how many, like, kids grew up into being old enough to play with mobile devices mm-hmm. after that fact? You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of kids that probably were little kids growing up playing with their parents' old iPhones or iPads and stuff like that. They're a little bit older now and more capable of playing games and would probably be blown away to play something like Rolando that's like a full-blown mobile, like, specific platformer. So good thing that it exists still. And then as a second runner-up, we have Saga Scarlet Grace Ambitions. This is mostly due to Sean and Mikhail's pestering that it be included because it's that damn good. And I trust them. And, you know, it's definitely a prominent RPG series, the Saga series. And this is the first new game in English in a decade and a half. So that's a big deal. But also, it just seems like a really interesting and unique RPG that does a lot of different kind of outside-the-box type stuff that I think a lot of people get a kick out of or whatever. And it's a full-blown, totally premium, released at the same time as other platforms game, which I think is kind of cool too.
Yeah, Square that's
Enix
neat.
Seems to make a point to do that more and treat mobile kind of like on par with other platforms, which I like. So I would like to get into these games, but their RPGs in general just aren't totally my thing. But I can totally see why they're so hot on this one and why the spot up there.
It's
so
hard. Like, I mean, that was always like the challenge, like when you are supposed to play so many games for Touch Arcade, you know, it's like hard mm-hmm. to play like one game that's like, oh, this is like a 200 yeah. hour game.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, I will be playing like 500 other games
yeah.
at the same time instead.
Yeah. And that's why I love having people like Sean around that you can defer this stuff to and who actively wants to chew on it and digest it and, mm-hmm. you know, serve it up for everyone else. So that's why I poached liberally from his review to fill out this little Game of the Year thing. But I think that's if you're into RPGs, I think this is one you shouldn't miss, even though it's the exorbitant price of $24. I think you'll get your money's worth out of it. Actually, might have gone up to 30 already. That was a sale price. $24 was the sale price. Oh, no. Still 24. So, anyway. And then, again, I didn't really know what to do with Apple Arcade. I feel like it deserved to have a spot with the Game of the Year, but not really mixed in with the rest because it's a separate thing.
Yeah, I mean, because I feel like Sayonara Wild Hearts could be pretty easily in the arguments.
If this was not an Apple Arcade game, I think this would have been the overall Game of the Year because it's exactly the sort of thing we like and we look for when we do these sort of things, usually, you know what I mean? And it's from a developer that has consistently put out like a really amazing and groundbreaking stuff over the years too. But because it's an Apple Arcade game, I figured, well, let's give it its own award. Apple Arcade Game of the Year, Sayonara Wild Hearts. I don't know. You really hear a mixed bag of opinions on this game. Because there's a lot of people that are like, I don't get it, and I think it's too simple, or it's not gamey enough, maybe, or whatever. But this really is a case of, like, all the elements need to be part of the whole. Like, it's bigger than the sum of its parts, I guess, as you could say. Because it's really all about the music and the story being told and the visuals and stuff like that. And it's kind of just bound together with these different gameplay mechanics that on their own are super fun and interesting and challenging, but also, like, you wouldn't, if you don't care about the interactive art experience of this game and you were just playing it just from a purely mechanical standpoint, you'd be like, I don't really see what the big deal is. It's more about everything coming together into one big experience, which I thought was an awesome experience. So
yeah,
I thought this was a pretty easy pick for the Apple Arcade Game of the Year.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was all the Game of the Year stuff. So
top stories, this is always
check
fun.
Check them out. Yeah, and then we usually started doing this a few years ago, top stories of the year. It's simultaneously interesting and depressing because almost all the biggest traffic comes from free-to-play guides. And so it's like, sucks that that's the case, but also I think it's nice for people to know that when you see a free-to-play guide and you think, you know, you roll your eyes or whatever, that free-to-play guide is probably subsidizing the cost of us doing like 2 or 3 full reviews and like handful of news stories on stuff you actually do care about. So I look at it that way as like, hey, even if you don't get, you know, much out of the actual guides yourself personally, just know that they're going towards keeping the rest of the content flowing too, or whatever. But this year had a couple of anomalies. So news story wise, far and away, the most trafficked news story was the exclusive reveal of Valor's Reach from Wizards of the
Coast.
That's
really surprising to me. Like,
I thought so too. And like, it beat out every guide. It beat out everything. It was like
really?
The...
Did it get linked on Reddit or something like that? Like really high up?
Possibly, or else it's just maybe the Magic world at large. Just thought it was
remember
really cool, but...
we were able to reveal like a Magic the Gathering card for an actual like Magic set once a few years ago, and that was like
a
off fucking
too.
Chain because it got linked on like every Magic site,
subreddit,
everything else.
Yeah, from what I can tell is that like unlike a lot of other exclusives we do where we maybe are the first to break the news, but then every other site just rewrites the stuff and doesn't really source or whatever. This story really seemed to be all signs pointing back to our original story. And our name getting dropped a lot as the people that broke the story or whatever. So it truly was like an exclusive reveal, which a lot of times that just seems like a dumb buzzword or whatever. It doesn't mean anything anymore. In this case, this story did like twice the traffic of our next top story. And so that just blows my mind. I would have never expected it. Even at the time, like it seemed like a lot of people were talking about it and stuff, and we were getting comments on Twitter and blah, blah, blah. But it didn't seem like it was like that big of a deal. So I guess we'll be keeping an eye on Valor's Reach this year, but
yeah, I guess that's.
And then you can see Terraria was after that. It was a big deal that it was getting updated again after a long time. And Five Nights at Freddy's stuff is still popular. And Castlevania Grimoire Souls Story was really popular, even though that game never ended up coming out this year in the U.S. It's still soft launched. Call of Duty Mobile was obviously a big deal. So. The sad part is that reviews and previews, actually previews, none of them actually even made the top 10. It was all just reviews. The kind of sad story about this was that only one of these reviews was even in the top 50 of the most trafficked stories.
Yeah, that's always how it is. I mean, yeah. Or it has been for years anyway. Like.
And weirdly, it was this Dawn of Isles MMO game that I didn't think was popular at all.
I think a year or two ago we had one that was a similar kind of like weird free-to-play MMO-ish game review. And my theory for that is we would find this a lot with, let's see, what were the guides that, well, so we had, I don't remember if it was SimCity or Disney or something, Eric wrote a guide for like some game, I don't remember what it was, but it was like, when you type the game name into Google, that was like the only relevant thing that came up.
Really?
And it had this like massive fucking fan base, but like just no one cared because it was like so outside of the realm of what anyone that's actually writing about video games even cares about writing about, you know?
Right.
So I wonder if like Dawn of Isles in a similar situation with.
It could be. I mean, it's something that's 100% not on my radar. But seeing that, I was like, oh, damn, maybe this thing has a big fan base or maybe nobody else is writing about it and people want to read stuff about it or whatever. Or maybe it's because it has Breath of the Wild in the title. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, actually, that's another. Maybe.
That may be it. Maybe we should do a test run of some review, whatever game.
I think for a joke, I don't remember what the headline was, but it was like, I don't know. It was something.
Oh, yeah, we squeezed like every SEO thing we
totally
could.
Totally stupid, and it did insane, yeah. And we were like, all right, well, why bother doing anything?
Yeah, it is kind of sad.
What was that IO game that was ultra popular? I remember Sean did like a top 10 reasons why whatever.io is better than peanut
Slither
butter.
Slither.
And that did like insane traffic.
Still does good traffic, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's sad. And then it was nice to see this top 10 sneaking in at number 9 and 10 was Hyper Light Drifter and Dead Cells. Two ports of high profile previously released on other platforms games. So I thought that was kind of interesting that people care enough to want to see reviews of the mobile versions of these ports from other platforms. When you could just be like, well, Dead Cells has been out forever. Everyone's reviewed it. So when the mobile version came out, do you even care about a Tetracade review or not? Which I guess people do.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And then another noteworthy thing was that there was only one Apple Arcade game review in this list for Cardpocalypse, but I don't know if that's so much.
I wonder if that, like, are people interested in the review or are they interested in like tips for how to?
I'm not sure. I should see if there's anybody there's probably some good candidates for guides for a few of those games and see how they do. But I also was wondering if, because it didn't launch until September, maybe didn't have as much time to get as much traffic as something that launched earlier in the year. And maybe that's why there was so little Apple Arcade kind of action traffic wise.
Yeah.
Well,
and so also like the other problem was too, like surrounding the Apple Arcade launch, like I don't know how, I would actually be really curious how like the internet as a whole did on Apple Arcade traffic for specific games, because it was like if all of a sudden Netflix launched and you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to start writing about stuff on Netflix. Like,
yeah. Right.
There's a million things to write about, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. And then the guide stuff, I guess the only interesting part about the guides is that half of the top 10 most trafficked guides were from 2018 or 2017. Mm-hmm. And so all it really tells you is that those things have a long tail. People continue to search for and read them well after they've been posted. And it kind of sucks that that's sort of like the thing that keeps us afloat traffic-wise. And then the more interesting stuff to me is like the full reviews or like news stories and stuff, which, like I said, the guides kind of subsidize that stuff. So it is pretty interesting. But so that was the top 10 different categories of story this year. And then Sean had one last best Switch article for the year, too, which I didn't get a chance to talk about last week because I hadn't posted it yet. But he did kind of like a Hidden Gems article. And definitely worth looking through. I think it's a nice mix of different games and probably some stuff you hadn't heard about compared to like the other best of lists or whatever. Good things on here.
The only game, well, aside from Dandy Dungeon, I knew about that one, but because it's a mobile game, but this Mextermination Force, that's the only one that I even know on this list.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's like nice to see somebody.
That's a Gunman Clive developer.
It is a Gunman Clive developer, and it's sort of like a boss rush version of Contra is what that game is. You just fight these giant bosses that have like these intricate, patterns and stuff. And it's supposed to be a really awesome game, although that's one that's been on my list that I've never ended up picking up yet. But Will, due to his recommendation, I did just buy Iron Cryptical, which is kind of a Smash TV sort of thing. Based on his recommendation and the fact that I think it was like $1.50 on sale or something. And then
I only buy
Evo is a game that I would play
that are 17 cents or less on the eShop.
There was a few games where I was like, should I just buy this 17 cent game? No, I don't care. I won't play it. I don't want to feed into this stuff. But good mix of games and recommendations on here for kind of a different list of best Switch stuff. Definitely check this one out. It's called the top 10 2019 Switch games you probably didn't play but should. And then the last thing I had to talk about was actually not a best of the year thing, but a top 10 Switch games to look forward to in 2020, according to Sean. And I think most stuff on here is kind of not up my alley, but Animal Crossing, obviously, is high up on my list. March 20th, can't come soon enough. The new Hollow Knight, I think, will be cool. New Axiom Verge, I think, will be cool, but I should probably get around to beating the originals before I worry about the sequels. Moon is a game I never heard about before, but sounds extremely interesting. It was originally launched on PlayStation 1 and never released outside of Japan. So the fact that they're bringing this back and releasing it and translating it and stuff is kind of a big deal. but the premise is kind of funny. It's like, it's about, you know, if you'd ever thought about like the protagonist in most RPGs and what they're actually doing and how it's affecting the rest of the world by just barging into anyone's house and like rooting through their drawers and stealing items and stuff like that. And then just killing all the wildlife around town and stuff like that. Like if you really sat and thought about what an RPG protagonist does, it's kind of funny to be like, yeah, that guy's like, who does he think he is? That's sort of the premise of this game, is like dealing with RPG tropes like that, which I think sounds really interesting. And then by far, well, maybe not as much as Animal Crossing, but I am super looking forward to Streets of Rage 4.
Is this like a brand new,
it
like
is
100% from the ground up?
From the ground up, 100% brand new, made by the people that made Wonder Boy Dragon's Trap and redid that. So that's why it's got this really awesome redrawn art and stuff like that. But what was interesting is during the development, they would be coding their engine for this new game, and immediately next to them was a Genesis with the original game on it. And so they would go back and forth to make sure that they got everything feeling just like the original game, but it's all in this brand new package or whatever. Just can't wait. It looks so badass. Watch videos of Streets of Rage 4 if you haven't yet. But no specific release date other than sometime this year. But I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. It seems pretty done.
So this is not based on any kind of like a game that ever existed before. It's a 100% new thing.
100% new entry in the original trilogy. That's series surprising. Of Streets of Rage. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It has two returning characters. Actually, three, technically, although one was only in the first game.
Because who owns the original Streets of Rage IP? I feel like that's Sega, right?
Sega, yeah. Pretty sure it's Sega. And I think Sega's all on board with all this stuff. Pretty sure they owned Wonder Boy, too. Although maybe not. Fact-checking on the fly, which I don't like to do. Streets of Rage.
The original Sega. Streets of Rage, published and developed by Sega. All right, well,
yeah,
sure.
So that's interesting, but that's
it. Like, so wait a minute. Like, so this is like Sega owned IP that they're just like, all right, yeah, here, you guys did a good job with Wonder Boy. Here you go, just fuck around with, what used to be a tentpole IP of, Sega. Wow.
Well, there's been a almost Streets of Rage 4 multiple times. That one at the last second, the licensings fell through and they ended up releasing the game under a different name with different characters and stuff. But it was effectively supposed to be a 3D Streets of Rage because it was at the late 90s when 3D was the thing, right? And so I'm glad it never came out as a Streets of Rage game because I think it would have damaged the reputation that original trilogy still has. So I feel like this, now that we're at the point we're at, it's okay to make a 2D game that just looks really good nowadays. It, not everything has to be 3D or whatever. I think that they'll do the series justice. Kind of in the same way that Contra 4 released back in the day on the DS is like one of the best Contras. And there had been other Contras since the first three or whatever. But some of them went off the rails and some of them just weren't as good. And nothing really lived up to that legacy. And so when they did Contra 4, it was like with the notion of, I want to live up to the legacy and pretend like I'm an actual sequel to this game, the original games. And so I think that's what Streets of Rage 4 will be. But watch some trailers of it if you haven't, because it looks so good in motion. And I think it's going to be a really fun game. Probably really
crazy.
Fun.
I only saw people like talking about this on Twitter. I thought they were like just fucking around, because like, it's like being like, oh, there's going to be a new Golden Axe game. It's like, what? Yeah. That's, why would that ever be a thing?
There might be a new Golden Axe game someday. I feel like with Sega, it's like, I don't think they trust themselves to do right by the legacies of their biggest properties. And so they're okay with like a proven team that loves and cares the IP they're working with to make a new game like this, kind of in the same way they did with Sonic Mania, where they were like, look, we've tried making new Sonic games. We tried giving you what you want. We still can't get it right. Let's let these guys do it and see if they can do it right. And they did. I think that's sort of a similar situation here. But yeah, Streets of Rage 4, can't wait for it. 2020.
That's cool.
Another good list of Switch stuff to check out if you're interested in Switch.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of all I had to talk about.
Oh, you know what I didn't mention during our off-topic section? To follow up on the legalization of marijuana in Illinois, first of the year, became legal.
Mm-hmm. I saw the line you posted of people waiting.
Complete shit show.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been interesting. All right, like it's taxed like something like 25 or 30% or something like that, which is a lot. Yeah. And I don't know. It's actually I don't know. Really, I'm not super into fucking like weed or anything. So this is just like for me, it's just kind of like interesting seeing, kind of like from a cultural perspective, the shift. Because like I remember like we're similar age, you know. So like you grew up and it was like. You know, Cheech and Chong, and then you had like kind of like the into the 90s, like Half Baked and stuff like being like you know, kind of like the movies where it was like, oh yeah, stoner comedies, these are funny, like oh yeah, drugs. So I don't know, it's just like really interesting to live in a time and in a place where it's just like, oh yeah, just go to the store if you want that. Like, and the police are managing traffic and like all of a sudden it's just like really, really odd.
When there's been entire movies about trying to score weed from someone.
Yeah, kind of like which I don't know. It's crazy. I wish my dad was still around because like I just like can't even wrap my head around like how he would be like even processing this, you know, as like a someone that was born in like 1955 that lived through like the whole hippie age.
Right.
Yeah. That now is like, oh, yeah, you know, we go to the store.
It's fine. Yeah, they have their own store for that.
It's
now.
Fine. It's legal and everything else. And.
So are you telling me that 3 days now that the devil's lettuce has been legal and there hasn't been any like mass killings or anything like that? Because that goes against what I've heard about those drugs.
Jeff Scott of Born48app/SlidePlayFame actually texted me and asked me if everyone in Illinois is addicted to heroin now.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, funny you mentioned that, because when you go to the dispensary to buy a weed, you get a coupon for one free heroin.
One free, Well, yeah, I guess enjoy all of your newfound tax money.
I mean, they said that it made $3 million in tax money in one day, like the first day it was.
I believe it.
So I mean, that's cool because
go repair some roads.
Geez, like make everything legal and tax it. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, no kidding. Know.
But it's wild. The lines were insane. Like people, I was reading on like our local Facebook thing. We're waiting like 6 hours.
Yikes.
Which is, and the, like everything about this is like such a mind fuck to me because it's like the closest public parking lot you can park in to go to the dispensary closest to my house is the police station.
So are people so parking
you
there?
Park, yeah. And they're telling, they're encouraging people to park at the police. So you park at the police station, you walk across the street and like down a little bit. There's police officers like acting as like crossing guards. Because there's so many people coming and going.
Yeah.
So the police, they tell you, park in our parking lot. We'll help you cross the street. They're managing traffic in the actual, like, dispensary parking lot, which basically amounts to, like, a couple police officers. Like, every person that turns in, they're like, oh, dude, go turn around and go park in the police station kind of thing. Okay. And I guess you just wait in line and, you know,
That's wild, man.
Do your thing. It's weird.
Be curious to see how long that boom lasts too, though, because I'm sure it won't be lines like that forever. But
oh yeah, people will get bored really quick. I mean, like that's.
I wonder if the cities that surround you that all rejected this are like, oh man.
Oh, I'm sure they are. I mean, because so there were some people that were like from one of the newspapers that were asking like people where they're from, and it was like from in line, and it was like most of the people were from the cities that they said they couldn't wouldn't open, and in the dispensaries kind of like in Northern Illinois, like a lot of people from Wisconsin and shit, like it's so stupid. Like it should just, I don't know. I think all drugs should just be legal and taxed and
Yeah, maybe not all, but
most
one like that.
I would say most.
Yeah.
I would say all. I don't care. Like, whatever. Yeah. You know, like.
I don't know if you want to do it on PCP that's just roaming around that can buy it at 7-Eleven.
But I mean, I don't know. I feel like the escalation of that kind of stuff is like a product of scarcity of other things potentially. I don't know. I don't give a shit. I think everything should be legal. Fuck it. I don't give a shit.
Anarchy.
Fuck the world. Fuck the world. 2020. That's my slogan.
Maybe everything doesn't need to be legal. It's just nothing needs to be illegal. How about that?
Well, yeah. All right. Fine. Like maybe you don't go to the store to buy PCP, but you don't go to fucking jail for doing PCP. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Well, that'll be interesting to thread to follow as the weed crops grow in your city.
Yeah. Well. We'll see. What's been interesting is the amount of people that have gotten like really brazen, that like weird, like local drug dealers, like publicly posting that they're selling for cheaper than the dispensaries.
Wow.
Which like, I think I talked about it on the podcast, but I did this thing at the local police station where it was like the Citizens Police Academy stuff where you kind of like, you know, got a bunch of tours of like different police bullshit that they do.
Yeah.
And like, one of the things is like, there's people that their job is to just work the internet. Like look at like local Craigslist, like look at local Facebook, like all that stuff. And you have these fucking idiots that are like, oh yeah, don't bother buying from the dispensary. Like here's my address. Like just come ring my doorbell and I'll sell it for you for half or whatever. Like what are you thinking, dude? Like that is, I don't know.
Look, I got 100 pounds of it in my house right now at this address. So
dumbest
thing. Hey, cops or other drug dealers that want to rob me, feel free.
I can only fucking imagine. Like I don't know. But so interesting. This is an interesting piece. I know we're running long, so I'll just give you this piece of interesting trivia. So in Illinois, the current drama is that in order to have a gun in Illinois, you have to have something called a FOID card, which is a fire owner's ID card, which basically amounts to, it's like a secondary driver's license kind of thing, which I don't know. You have to basically pass whatever background check there is. And the card basically proves like, okay, like I've done whatever certification or, you know, I've met whatever criteria is required to own a gun in Illinois. And like, so people think that because you need to get your driver's license scanned to go into these dispensaries, that there's going to be some like new reckoning of anyone that's had their driver's license scanned is going to get their like gun owner card revoked. So there's this like huge drama with like all these people that are like gearing up for some kind of like crazy fight surrounding like, I should be able to be high as a kite and also have guns.
That'll be interesting
too. There's a lot of interesting stuff that has happened in Illinois in the past day or two. Yeah. So
I could really go off on a crazy gun tangent over a recent story, but I think probably should have to save it for next time or just save it for not at all, because bringing that stuff up on the internet is never a good idea.
Yeah. But, I'm just saying, I'm not making an opinion one way or another. I'm just saying there is local drama surrounding these like different government databases that gun people are really worried that are going to intermingle. And
that's why we shouldn't be forced to register our firearms.
Yeah, I guess just fucking shoot everything. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we should fucking shoot this podcast and put it out of its misery.
Get stunned and shoot this podcast with your unregistered weapon. So extra large New Year's edition of the Touch Arcade Show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Touch Arcade is primarily supported through our Patreon patrons. So if you like what we do, want to see us keep doing it, please consider going to patreon.com/touch arcade and consider throwing at least a dollar a month our way. I will mention that I pushed the Patreon pretty heavily in our best game stuff or whatever, and kind of laid out the situation with Touch Arcade and kind of how we're hanging by a thread and have been for a while, and got a lot of support, a lot of new patrons, and a lot of new people subscribing to our Patreon. So I just want to say thank you to all the new people and the existing people that have been doing that for some of you years and years now. Really do appreciate it. And it's very humbling to see when we put a call out for help and people rise to the occasion. It's really awesome. But also could always continue using more help. So do check out our Patreon or do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. And yeah, I think that's kind of it for our New Year's episode. With that, we'll bid you adieu, and we will see you on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show next week.
I feel like you should add something to that.
Like?
I don't know. Fuck it. Who cares? See ya.
I'll think of something for next week.
All right. Sounds good.